thing's not going away anytime soon. You know, first off, everyone's waiting to see what the Astros do. You know, what the players say when they meet in mass. I know one of the things that's potentially been talked about is that they don't talk at all. That Jim Crane, their owner, just basically comes out, says something in their behalf. The players remain silent. I think part of the rationale, if that's what happens, is going to be the fact that, you know, they don't want to open themselves up to lawsuits. Like we saw that one that was placed by the former Dodger and Blue Jay pitcher, Mike Bolsinger, earlier this week. But I tell you what, if that happens, if the Astros players don't say anything, it is going to generate a tsunami of response from other folks with other teams because they're really angry. And today, you know, I was in and Aaron Boone's press conference, and it was very interesting because on one hand, you have the Astros all buttoned down and tight-lipped and no one talks, and they're actually, you know, guards separating them from the media. And then I'm at Yankees camp, and everyone is speaking pretty openly about how they feel. Masahiro Tanaka the other day, yeah, I feel like I was cheated out of the 2017 World Series. Today, Gary Sanchez making jokes about the buzzer system. you know, Luis Severino talking about, you know, thinking back to when everyone was saying he was tipping his pitches. Well, maybe it wasn't that. you know, Aaron Boone was very honest, saying that he sent, when A.J. Hinch got suspended and got fired by the Astros, he sent him a text, and he said, I don't know if I'm ready to talk to him. And and he also said that based on Hinch's answer in that interview he did last Friday, which I thought was terrible, you know, when he was asked the question about, did the Astros use buzzers in 2019? And he didn't say no. He didn't say yes. He said, well, the investigators said that it didn't happen, and I believe that. And everyone was like, what kind of answer is that? and Aaron was very open today and said, no, that he wasn't buying that per se, that they weren't. And he said maybe it's something we're never going to know the answer to, but there is a lot of anger burbling as camps open.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, this is going to be such a weird spring training for the Astros. I mean, how do they handle themselves this spring? At some point, the George Springers and especially the Jose Altuves are going to be in front of the cameras, and you know it's coming.
I think they're going to look ridiculous if they don't answer any questions about it. Personally, I think they should watch the video that Marwin Gonzalez, their former teammate, when he spoke with reporters yesterday. I mean, he gave a human response. Not only did he say he was sorry, you know, which everyone's been saying, but then he went on to acknowledge that other people were hurt by the actions of the Astros, and he talked about reaching out to players on other teams. It was relatively human. And look, I've told you, there are guys in the Astros teams I really like. Like, I think they're good people, and I'm sure they're going to be, you know, really torn about what's going to happen. And we've talked about, I don't think we've ever seen anything like they're in for this year when they go around from ballpark to ballpark. You know, the closest thing that for individuals that we've seen are Barry Bonds and Roberto Alomar after the spitting incident. Yeah. But to see an entire team have to do those 81 road games like their perp walks, that's going to be unbelievable to watch.
Buster, there was an interesting article last week in the Wall Street Journal explaining about how the front office knew more about the sign stealing than maybe was initially thought. And then there's yesterday in The Athletic, we hear that Beltran and Cora were huge parts of this thing. I guess, how big a deal do you think Alex Cora actually played in this?
I got to tell you, what I think is going on behind the scenes, and I'm at the point because I know a lot of conversations that are taking place behind the scenes and, you know, different people trying to sell different angles. I'm not going to believe anything that's said unless someone puts their name to it and goes on the record, because that story yesterday, the anonymous sources, it didn't pass the smell test for me, not because the reporters did anything wrong. You know, they're talking to their sources. But the idea of Carlos Beltran, who is, as an executive said to me yesterday, he is a sweetheart of a man, and Alex Cora, I've known for years, I worked with him at ESPN, the idea that those two guys were like fourth-grade bullies, forcing the other adults in the room to go along with this thing is a joke, if you know those two guys. Now, did they make mistakes? Absolutely. and they're paying for them, and they should pay for them. But the idea that this room full of adults, A.J. Hinch, Alex Bregman, you know, other players, you know, it was all Cora and Beltran's fault, stop. And it feels like that this is just another layer of a lack of accountability among some of the Astros. I'm not going to put them all in the same category, but all those guys sort of trying to cover their rear ends by giving anonymous quotes and pointing fingers at other people. You know, I got a call yesterday from someone who has some knowledge of this, and the first thing was, are we really going to do this? Like, if this is what's going to happen, that people are going to just start throwing each other under the bus anonymously just to cover their rear ends? It's a joke.
Buster Olney, ESPN MLB Insider. Thanks to Lucky's Trailer Sales, Peterbilt of Vermont. I guess I'll ask my one follow-up question on that. Look, my analogy earlier was that the drug kingpin always is more wanted by the police than the drug runner. Jeff Luhnow knew about this. A.J. Hinch knew about this. They did it for multiple seasons.
They all did it.
So,
yeah, they all knew about it.
Yeah, but Alex Cora was only in there for 1 year, and now we're seeing that maybe nothing comes out of the Boston investigation. Does he deserve less than the 1 year that they got because they carried it on multiple seasons?
No, I think he's going to get at least 1 year. And look, we don't know what's going to happen with the Red Sox thing. I know there are indications, and the Red Sox seem to be sending out signals that, yeah, we're don't think anything's going to happen. Because he was named so prominently in Rob Manfred's report, I do think he's going to wind up getting some sort of suspension. You know, I hope from as we move forward that basically anything that we learn about this, I hope someone puts their name to it. Because I know this for a fact, behind the scenes it's getting absurd how it's almost like a, you know, in a prison where people are turning on each other. No, it was his fault. No, it was his fault. And it's just ridiculous.
I think we get more stuff on where Tom Brady's going to play next year than we get on that. Buster, Ron Radke, he's the manager. They give him the interim tag. Why? Is it because they want to see how this year goes? Is there a chance that Cora could come back? Or is it don't read anything into that?
Well, I mean, first off, the timing of this going down the way that it did with Alex could not have been worse. You know, in the middle of January, and a lot of the candidates were, you know, had already been hired potentially. Heim Bloom had just coming over from the Rays, doesn't know people in the organization, and he probably has some people in mind, but he can't even talk to them in the Rays organization because of the agreement that he had when he left the team. So it's not a great situation in which to try to hire a manager. And oh, by the way, while the Red Sox might feel confident that nothing's going to happen, you still have to wonder if in fact that it is proven that they were engaged in sign stealing in 2018, how do you keep the bench coach
right. Is
the manager of that team? Now, yep. I would tell you this. I mean, Ron Renneke is a great baseball guy. He is an experienced manager. He's very even-keeled. He's absolutely perfect for the type of situation that they're in right now because he'll just go about the business of doing his job and trying to get better on a daily basis.
Buster, Chris Sale apparently now has pneumonia.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, it's just one thing after another. The Prince of Darkness here, Chris Sale. I mean, is there any chance we're ever going to see the Chris Sale from the White Sox and first couple of years of the Red Sox, Chris Sale, ever again?
You know, when that you made reference to it when we started a thing that I would have to break away to talk to Chris Sale, that was 2 days after he agreed to the story. That story broke, and we talked at that time how it wasn't a good it wasn't a good idea. We were shocked. People with other teams were shocked that the Red Sox didn't wait until they at least got a chance to see him pitch after he broke down at the end of the 2018 season. They didn't. You know, you hope that Chris is able to come back. I've had a couple people tell me they think that he's healthy with his arm, and maybe this is just a minor setback at the beginning of camp.
Buster, I actually like the deal and how it got finalized. I like the players the Red Sox got for Mookie Betts and David Price and the salary relief. I hate how the process went down over the weekend. What did you make of just the back and forth and we're kicking the Twins out of the deal and asking for more prospects? What did you think of that?
That it was a case of Red Sox ownership reacting to some of the criticism they were hearing. Let's face it, a lot of criticism over the deal. And, you know, when they found out that Gratterall was projected more as a reliever than a starter, then they wanted an adjustment. Now, you know, the other day after that the deal went down, I reached out to a bunch of people with other teams, evaluators, and said, what do you think of the deal? And so many people came back and said in so many words, you know what, the Boston mistake with Mookie Betts was not signing him after year three and getting him locked up earlier in his career. But once that's done, once the horse, you know, the horse is out the barn door, then where they were with 1 year left for Betts before he becomes a free agent, with David Price, you know, owed $96 million, every person I talked to thought the Red Sox made a good deal, that it was a good baseball trade in terms of value for value. It's going to feel really bad when Betts gets inducted to the Hall of Fame and he's not wearing a Red Sox uniform. But in terms of this particular trade, the return under the current circumstances, they thought the Red Sox did well.
Buster Olney of ESPN with us here. He's live at spring training down in Tampa. The Yankees facility is all with us thanks to Lucky's Trailer Sales and Peterbilt of Vermont. On the field, the Red Sox have to try to replace Mookie. They could use another right-handed hitting outfielder. We're hearing rumors about former Jays defensive standout Kevin Pillar. What do you make of those rumors?
That they're true. I think the Red Sox are at the point where, let's face it, they're going to have to start preparing for the potential sell-off. So if you go after Kevin Pillar, then you not only think that because the other outfielders on that team are all left-handed hitters, Benintendi, Verdugo, Jackie Bradley Jr., but there's also a possibility this season that they're going to wind up trading Jackie Bradley Jr. And so you're going to need some depth. Once you trade Mookie Betts, once you trade David Price, even though you did a good job unloading his contract, you're still trading away innings that you have to replace, and the Yankees are going to have a really strong team. You're in a better position to be aggressive and to make deals. And Kevin Pillar, I think, you know, you bring him in and you play him, and maybe he becomes a center fielder if Jackie's traded away. And if he happens to play well the first 3 months, he could have some trade value.
I could see the promo now. Here we are, Sunday Night Baseball. We're just killing time until the Yankees-Dodgers World Series. Something like that.
What do you think? Wow.
Hey, come on, let's be honest. It's going to be Yankees-Dodgers, right? There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
Well, I think the Washington Nationals might be a good reminder for you.
Yes, exactly.
About how in a short series, you just never know. On paper, I've told you guys that the Yankee teams that they put together for this year is the best team on paper that I've seen since those late 90s Yankees teams.
Wow.
I mean, they just, with Garrett Cole at the front of the rotation, Severino in number two, and I saw Garrett Cole throw his bullpen session for the Yankees today with their bullpen strong and now augmented by the presence of a guy who's going to throw seven or eight innings on the day he starts. And think about this. They had over 2,000 days lost to injuries last year. Aaron Judge missed 60 games. Giancarlo Stanton was limited to 59 at-bats. Miguel Andujar, second rookie year in 2018. He played just 12 games. Severino made only three starts. They won 103 games, and they led the majors in runs scored. And now they have Garrett Cole. Yeah, wow. They're really strong.
All right. Well, with that in mind, I get that they're going to score 16 runs every single night, but I'm looking for the glass half empty as the Sox guy who knows my team has absolutely no shot. Is the James Paxton injury a concern moving forward?
Well, it is because it cuts into their depth. I hate even suggesting, but let's say they get injuries at the front end of their rotation.
Right.
That a Garrett Cole, Luis Severino are affected. The safety nets are not as deep as they were because Domingo Herman is serving a domestic violence suspension. He's not going to be back until the first week of June, eligible to come back. And then Paxton, I saw him walking through the clubhouse today. He looks okay, but they're saying it's going to be 3 or 4 months. And, their depth, that is certainly taking a hit with those two situations.
Buster, what do you think of the Major League Baseball playoff proposal? You seem to be a fan of this on Twitter, if I'm reading the tea leaves correctly.
I am a fan of it on Twitter, and I got to say I'm like in a minority of like 92 based on the reaction on Twitter because people were going nuts about it. Look, I the polarized nature of the standings in recent years really concerned me, that you have these super teams, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Astros, the Dodgers. Not only in terms of how many games they win, but also their money. And I think what's happened a lot is that there are a number of teams that are saying, we can't compete with that, so we're just going to tank, and which is why you get a situation where the Orioles lose 18 of 19 to the Yankees and finish, 50 games out of first place. That's been a real problem, the polarization of the standings for baseball in recent years. And I think the idea of expanding the playoff field would give more incentive to teams to actually try to win and to participate. And yesterday, and I think especially small market, mid-market teams would benefit from that. And yesterday, while I was getting hammered on Twitter for saying I liked it, I called around to folks, small market, mid-market teams, people been in the game a long time. As one person said, look, I'm a traditionalist. They loved it. Like, they loved the idea. Because let's face it, you know, the Tampa Bay Rays might be baseball's best-run organization. They can do everything right, and they still might finish 10 games behind the Yankees. Because it's like a 250-pound heavyweight boxer going up against the flyweight because of the financial disparity between the two teams and what they spend. So I do think that, you know, they need to come up with a system that includes more teams potentially having the hope of making the postseason.
Buster, we'll get you out of here on this. What do you make of the reaction, though, by my new favorite player, Trevor Bauer?
Yeah.
Well, he went crazy, you know, sent out a video. He was enraged. He sent out a thing against Manfred. And when I saw the first video I saw where he criticized it, what he criticized it for, he just fed into a misconception because he was talking about, well, now the number one seed is going to be backed up 6-7 days. The number one pitcher is going to have to sit back. No, it's not accurate. Under the proposed format, it would take the exact same number of days that we already have. It would not lengthen the season. It would not add any days to the season. They would just play, you know, that wild card round in the same four-day window, Monday through Thursday, that we currently have the play-ins, the tiebreakers, and the wild card game. They would just do away with the tiebreakers and play-in games, defer to the regular season standings to break ties, and just play the three-game wild card rounds, which means the number one seed, the eighth pitchers like Trevor, they're still pitching on Thursday or Friday for the number one team. I saw a lot of people making that mistake, saying, what, is this going to drag out till December now? No, it's still within the